A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time! And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series!
I remember running home from school, turning on the TV to the Cubs game, sitting with my dad to watch his heroes.
Welcome to the World Series Dream, Chicago Cubs Screamcast. Now hanging out with Obstructed View. We are not affiliated with the actual Chicago Cubs. We're just a bunch of fans who love the local nine and talking baseball, including the 2016 World Series champion Cubs. Hello, I am Kit. I am sick. With me is Jeff, who I hope is not sick. How are you doing, Jeff?
As far as I know, I'm not sick. You never know, though.
it's not the bad thing. It's just a cold, but it is extremely annoying. But I'm here. You're here. Oops, someone else is about to be here. That would be Adam. Hello, Adam. We just started, but you are here on time, as I am sick. But we're going to get through this.
All right.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear you're sick.
That's okay. I, too, I'm sorry. Like, I have to give talks and stuff this week. Doctor told me I wasn't supposed to be talking, but that didn't work very well. Anyway, how are you guys doing tonight?
Doing all right. Wish the weekend was a day longer.
Yeah, a couple wins longer.
That's unfortunate, but I did check. The Cubs are actually right at their Pythag, so their 13-9 record as of this recording is basically their Pythagorean record. So they're not underperforming, but unfortunately they're not overperforming either. So I don't know what to tell you about that.
Oh, they're just performing. So they're performing okay.
I'm tired of these performative wins. They have to be a genuine winner.
I mean, it all counts on the ledger, right?
Yeah, the ledger's the only thing that counts, really, I guess.
So, yeah, I think we can put this to rest, but based on everything that happened after I guess it's the IRS guy, like, basically released this really long report, and I had shared the Cespedes BBQ guys podcast with you all. I read through it. It's pretty cut and dry. Like, Shohei didn't do it. His translator was just an idiot.
It's just like all that stuff, like, oh, it's hard to believe that this happened. The hardest part for me to believe was that he admitted in a team meeting that that's what was going on. But it seems like he actually thought that might work. And like, he got further away with that level of admission than you could imagine. But yeah, he was just totally took advantage of the trust he had. And yeah. I mean, you have that much money and see how someone can get hidden in it, spending where no one is expecting something bad to go down.
Yeah, I'm still surprised we haven't had any news about like everyone else around Shohei being fired for falling for this. Shohei at least has the excuse that, you know, he's busy being a professional athlete and it's everyone else's jobs to, you know, look out for him on this stuff.
Yeah, I guess with that much money, you have to have a backup for your backup, but it seemed like his translator was the only guy who had access to that account, because he was the gentleman who literally went to the bank with Shohei, signed the papers, translated for him, therefore had the access, and that's all you really need. Once you have access, you basically have the full run of all that money, and I guess he never cared about it because all his other money, which was probably much more than he was getting paid by the Angels, was being managed by other, hopefully more trustworthy people. But yeah, it's a story that is sad, but is finally over until I guess we hear about how they're sentencing him. I think his life is effectively over.
Yeah, we'll see how it sounds like everyone's fully cooperating here, so. You know, who knows what the actual sentence will be. You know, at the same time, you know, what the feds really care about. Well, I guess he did steal billions of dollars. But what the feds really care about is the illegal gambling guy. But I guess when someone steals millions of dollars from his employer. I guess that's also a federal crime.
Moving forward, that dude has nowhere to go. Like, with such a high profile embarrassment that has to be now known all across America, all across Japan, and probably a good part of, you know, all the lands in between. What does he have left to do? Like, who's ever going to trust him with anything?
Yeah, part of whatever agreement they had, I think, while he's, you know, in this process, that he has to hold down a job to keep his, like, is he American citizen or work? I can't remember. If he has to keep a visa, and like who's going to hire him? you'll go to McDonald's in Anaheim and see Ipe there.
Yeah, and he had, I can't remember where I said, if I said this on the, you know, the blog comments or what, but the level of gambling was just, you know, it was kind of like when Wilt Chamberlain had made that claim about sleeping with 10,000 women, and it's just like, how?
And if you would physically have enough time to do this.
Like, the number of bets that he was doing on average every day was just astounding. Like, oh my God. Just
it was playing DraftKings app, like one of those finger smashing games on your phone.
but that's just it. Like, he wasn't, as far as I know, like I didn't look into all the details, but I know, like, the whole reason why it was illegal gambling, aside from, you know, it not being approved in California, is that he wasn't using, like, the apps. Like, how do you even make it happen without people noticing? Like, forget about the money being gone. Where was he? Like, I would think he would be gone half the time.
I'm glad you said something about that, because I always thought it was an app, but then you're looking at, like, the various number of pages of text messages. So he basically had to place those bets through those text messages, and the bookie had to, like, hunt him down. And basically, at one point in the reading, it sounded like he was about to break Shohei's kneecaps because he couldn't get in touch with him. It was kind of bad and somewhat dangerous. But, you know, this is, of course, the Cubs podcast. I guess we care, but we don't care about Shohei anymore. The Cubs actually, I think, have a better record than the Dodgers at this time, which is kind of funny. I don't think that's going to stay true for too much longer, because the Dodgers are going to eventually remember that they're supposed to be good. But the Cubs also have a bunch of guys coming back from injury sooner than we had anticipated. So I think we can talk about that. Get your gentleman's reaction on what we've seen so far in these first 22-ish games. And let's see where we're going from here. How's that for a plan, guys?
I love this plan. I'm excited to be a part of it. Let's do it.
I'm good for
it. As the spring gave away to summer, past the ivy-colored dreams, toward the days that kept us yearning for tomorrow.
If you're tuning in on the off day after the Marlins series, you know that we split the series with the Marlins. It could have been 3-1. It could have been a clean sweep. Things didn't happen. That's baseball. Sometimes it just doesn't bounce your way, and it was really evident in Sunday's game. But for the most part, I feel like the team is doing more than treading water. They are now second in the NL Central. They actually are holding a wild card spot, believe it or not. And they are one of maybe, I want to say, six teams currently with 13 or more victories. No, five. So we got the Braves and the Phillies and the Brewers with 14 each. Cubs and Dodgers have 13 each. And then everybody else is below. So, yeah, like, only five teams in the NL have 13 victories at this time. And the Cubs are one of them. So what are your impressions of just anything right now, given injuries, underperformance, overperformance, surprise, you know, things like of that nature?
I feel pretty good about where they are. I mean, the pitching injuries in particular have been kind of a bummer, but, you know, I thought they had some depth going into the season, and now they do, even if that depth isn't going that deep into games, ironically.
The pitching with Tyone having one start, which went great, but without really having a spring training to speak of, he definitely looked more like the pitcher we thought the Cubs were getting last year, which makes sense, you know, but definitely encouraging to see, you know, he hasn't, you know, gone into another realm of existence or anything. He's still a good pitcher. Shota, obviously, got to be pleased with what he's done. Assad has been amazing. So to go without Steele for more than, what was it, a start and a half or so, and without Tyone until this weekend, and to have Hendricks be just lost at sea, but still, I mean, he's got a 12 ERA and he's earned it. It's been tough to watch, but it seems like they're just going to keep riding the storm out and see when he can get his command back, or, you know, I don't know exactly what it is, but it's, with a pitcher like Hendricks, he has so little wiggle room that when he's on, he's going to be good. And when he's off by just a little bit, the results are going to look terrible. So the fact that the Cubs are still in this position at 13-9 with all that they've gone through, now that Suzuki's been out for a decent chunk of time and half missing a few games, I mean, it's definitely all starting to add up, and it's impressive that they're still producing at this level with all of the negatives that really could have derailed a season up to this point.
There's like a compounding effect, right? Like, if the starters don't go deep in the games, now you have to eat more bullpen innings. And the bullpen is easily at least 40% of the innings being pitched right now. It's good to have really good, like, long relievers, like Ben Brown ate a few innings. Keegan Thompson, for whatever reason, he, like, sucked in the spring. He sucked last year, and then suddenly he comes back, and he's awesome. That's good, but having your bullpen do so much is, this early, is bad, and it's really testing the depth. So given all that, and, you know, there's good news on the horizon, because Steele is about to go to the Complex League to get some game action. He's been doing his bullpens. He was throwing today, right before the Marlins game, so that's great. Seiya Suzuki had the oblique thing, but now he's actually doing light baseball activity. Ian Happ was gone basically this entire weekend, but thinks he's good enough to come back on Tuesday. So it's like they're not going to be without these guys forever. And the B team was able to play the Miami Marlins to do a split, which, you know, obviously it could have been a series victory, but what happened to Edbert? We can talk about Edbert in a moment, but I really liked what he did today and what Craig Counsell allowed him to do today, pitching the eighth inning and just saying, you know what, we want to keep this game close. Let's see what you got. And he gave them what he had. It was a really clean inning. So I'm glad that they keep giving him those opportunities and he's really accepting them. So there's a good attitude to this team that's going to allow them to succeed in the long term if they actually get the bats and the pitching and the defense going at the same time. There's been some sloppiness, but I think that's just early season jitters and silliness.
Yeah, things seem pretty even keeled, for lack of a better word. Like, everyone's aspiring all this Craig Counsell magic, but I don't know if it has anything to do with it, but like the thing I would point to most actually would be Christopher Morel's defense, which, like, he had like a bad first week, and I was kind of getting flashbacks to like Kyle Schwarber, where, like, you know, he was not a good defensive outfielder. Let me be clear about that. But like, he had two like high profile errors, and then everyone was like, oh, he can't play in the field at all. And I was like, he's fine. And Morel's been better than that, obviously. Maybe I'm damning Morel by comparing him to Schwarber here, but first impressions can be bad. And it seems like he's managed to shake them off so far.
Yeah, I tend to think when you're evaluating defense, the natural eye test thing is the bad errors that stand out to you. But it really doesn't capture the balls that guys get to that average defender won't get to. Like Bush, you know, I focused early on what was happening when he was trying to scoop low throws out, which is just, you know, it's one element, but he also showed really great range on a play late in the game today that the balls that you get to that other guys wouldn't, those can play into the value that your defense adds a lot more than the handful of bad mistakes you're going to make, you know, just through physical errors that are going to happen to everybody. It's just sometimes they're timed so poorly that it stands out in your memory more. But yeah, it is really hard to evaluate defense overall. So yeah, I think that the glaring mistakes tend to weigh too heavily in how we evaluate a player. It was the same way with Ian Happ early last year. We just kind of had, you know, there were some errors that looked worse and they were ill-timed. And so, like, well, you can throw that gold glove goodbye. It was another one. And it, you know, in the end, I don't think the numbers bore out that he had a down year defensively. It's just bad errors stick in your memory more than just the play you didn't realize how good it looked.
I would tend to agree there. I think it's kind of funny that the Brewers right now, they're 14-6, and there was the graphic from either MLB or the Brewers themselves saying, like, he is the second Brewers manager to ever start the first 20 games 14-6. And I was like, well, that's cool. Who is number one? I didn't actually look that up. I want to say it's Craig Council, but at the same time, does it really matter? Like, I think, you know, Milwaukee is probably the beneficiary of an easy early schedule, but they're playing essentially like half and half good teams / quote bad teams, right? So the Cubs have basically done the same, although I think they've had one fewer bad team series than the other guys. And it doesn't help that the Brewers were playing the Cardinals head to head in their series, and the Cardinals just decided to lay down and die all weekend. So sucks for them. Yay, Cardinals lose. Boo, Brewers are winning, right? But the Cubs really, with a few different bounces and a few different pitch decisions, could have been in first place. And that's kind of amazing to think about.
Yeah, and it does go back to Adbert. You know, he's got 4 blown saves, and it's like JD keeps mentioning in the broadcast, his 4 blown saves basically come down to 4 bad pitches. You know, he's not getting hammered in general, which I'm not either, which is disappointing, but for different reasons. But, you know, he's got a little bit of homeritis, and it's really difficult to tell why that is when, again, you're talking about 4 pitches. Obviously, they were very weighty pitches. When you're the closer, you can't afford that. But it's also, I think, a little too early to say that they are predictive in any way. Does that mean I have great confidence in him as a closer and I don't want to see him eventually add someone, you know, like for any type of postseason consideration? Like, I love that Adbert's been a great closer, but I've never had the kind of confidence that would say, like, oh yeah, you can rest your hopes on an NLCS on Adbert closing out the game. But it really just does seem like variance / bad luck has just plagued Alzolay to this point in the season, and gotta hope, based on all the other pitching he's done aside from those 4 batters, that he'll come around at least a little bit better than what we've seen so far.
Yeah, there's really only one other person too that I'd want to really see in the closer role, which I guess would be Ben Brown, assuming that the rotation stays healthy. I don't remember how many innings he pitched last year, but you know, I figured he'd have an inning cap on him, so having him in the bullpen for a bit might help with that. And he certainly got the stuff to be a closer.
Oh, yeah. Like, he has, like, the two really sick pitches that he could work on, and I think he's developing a changeup. But I also like the part where he can throw four or five innings. And so I'm like one of those people who are old school and say, if you can throw multiple innings, you should do it. Now, that means he won't be able to go back-to-back days, and that means, like, the Cubs have to solve that problem some other way. But I don't know if there is an issue with relegating a guy who obviously has length to him into a single-inning role. So that's the only reason why I'm reluctant to do it. But I feel like, you know, you're probably right. He would be a great closer, given his stuff that he's shown so far.
I mean, a lot of people would be great closers. I mean, I'm sure Randy Johnson would have been a great closer, too.
I'm going to throw in a wild card as consideration for a trial closer when you're in a pinch, is that, you know, a guy who struggled a little early, maybe giving him some extra time off to work on some things and see how it happens and see if we might see shocking closer experiment Kyle Hendricks coming in and saving games like late era Trevor Hoffman with nothing but a change up and a mid fastball.
Yeah, I figured you were going to say something like that. The idea that I have for Hendricks is because he's fine like the first time through, and then just something breaks. He like loses his spots. He loses his command and he starts throwing meatballs. If you can just keep him to the first time through the order, he can be an opener. He can be a middle of the game, multi-inning spanner to get to your late inning guys, you know? So that's what I'm thinking. But like he alternates between being like, he's encouraging and then he just gives up home runs or seeing eye doubles or whatever, you know? And it's really, really difficult to know which one is true for him. So when I was looking at his game logs, it's like you can actually see like the first three innings he's probably fine, and then once that next inning comes, it's over. He's like susceptible to that big inning. So I guess the trick is knowing when to take him out before he gives up that big inning.
It'd be weird too, like at least this time he was kind of BABIP to death to be knocked out. I mean, he gave up that 5,000 foot home run earlier in the game, but overall it would just seem like a better start than his previous ones.
Oh, I definitely agree. Like I think he got dinked to death. This is a death by a thousand cuts, but a lot of the pitches that got put in play were in part of the zone. Like there was a time when he was like, you know, Cy Young Kyle style. He can get away with that. He can just like lob these 80 poo pitches in the middle of the zone and people would just pound them into the ground. But he can't get away with that anymore. And that's despite finding like half a mile per hour more in his pitches. Like he hit 90 this year, which normally doesn't happen. So it's not a velocity thing. It's a pitch selection / execution thing for him, and that's probably fixable if velocity and health isn't the issue.
Yeah, I looked through a lot of the batters he faced. You know, he didn't last all that long, and it just seemed odd that so many of his pitches were in the strike zone. You know, last year when he was really really going, it seemed like maybe a third of his pitches and up in the strike zone. He just got a lot of swings and misses on changeups and curveballs outside of the zone. If he's living entirely in the zone, yeah, when he throws them right down the middle, they're getting crushed. But even when, you know, they're finding the corners of the zone, if that's where he lives, there is going to be a lot of contact and he is going to be at risk for getting dinked and dunked. But I do think it would be very interesting to see him in a different role, if only for, you know, like every closer has their entrance music. And I think Kyle's would be the Me Channel theme from the week. Like just the most boring closer in the history of the game. Like, okay, I guess it'll probably be over and people will look foolish and he won't react at all as, you know, they play Go Cubs Go as he walks off. But if that were to happen, it would be a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah, there was probably a scenario where Cy Young caliber Jake Arrieta could have closed for the Cubs in the World Series if Mike Montgomery hadn't gotten very, very lucky with his matchup. And the fact that he hung that curveball to a guy who couldn't do anything with it is when I saw that pitch in the World Series, I like say, oh no. But thankfully, into the ground.
Beauty and the history in this cathedral. The sky so blue against the grass so green. Like time stood still forever.
I think Council is actually doing a fairly good job. I think there's a good clubhouse mentality. There was an interview. I think it was Elise Menaker who did the interview. She was talking about how Dansby actually brought Adbert into the cafeteria and looked in the iPad with him, and you can see Adbert in the dugout after his outing looking at the iPad with Tommy Hotovy, and just the work ethic is there, the drive is there, it's just a matter of execution at this point. So I think he's got them in a good position.
Yeah, I think overall the roster construction has kind of, you know, been with that eye as well, you know, good team guys, good chemistry. Obviously you want good players, but it just seems like they've done a good job of maintaining a good mix of players and establishing a decent culture. So it was interesting hearing you know, Pat Hughes ask Jim Deshaies if he ever had a veteran talk to him, you know, during a rough stretch, and he was like, nah, man, we didn't do that back then. That's a new development.
Yeah, that was a good one. I like the Pat and JJD combo. It's been entertaining on the Sunday games when Pat calls them.
Yeah, they're a good pair.
It's funny because some guys brought up how Pat doesn't have his normal cornball humor that, you know, with Zach Zaidman laughing in the background all the time. They don't have that same chemistry, but it's also like JD's a bit straighter with Pat than he is with Boo, which is interesting.
Yeah.
It's just a different dynamic. So that is kind of fun.
I bet they all get a kick out of those adult diaper commercials though, which is terrible because that speaks to the demographic that actually listens to Cubs games. Like, they really should be like selling Pokemon cards or something, or whatever it is kids do these days. But yeah, the adult diaper commercial, lots of laughs.
Hey, you should not knock them before you try them. Some days you just don't feel like going to the bathroom, and North Shore adult diapers.
When you have control problems.
Hey, no, I have total control. I could go anytime if I wanted to. I just don't. But there was a couple week back on the radio, someone obviously had written in and said, you guys shouldn't be making fun of people who wear adult diapers. Like, it's a very serious problem. And then Pat and Ron proceeded to say, like, of course, we're not making fun of anyone who has to use them. And then they proceeded to make fun of anyone who had to use them for the next 5 minutes. Which, you know, I think that's the only defense mechanism we have against that stuff is you have to joke about it because no one involved in any realm of it is proud of it. So you might as well laugh.
Yeah, it's revenue. And someone has to deal with all this crap.
But I'm sure the lady who wrote in was pissed. Whatever revenue streams you can get, you know.
So what do we got? We got Say on the IL. We got Justin. Julian Merriweather's not going to be back until like June.
Yeah, and Hap, big loss.
Hap isn't on the IL, but he should be back, we hope. So they essentially played shorthanded for a weekend, four games over 3 days, and still split. So, you know, I just kind of have to remind myself, they're the Miami Marlins. They're very bad. They deserve nothing but death and pestilence, but they're still a major league club, and they can still hit. And they also happened to make the playoffs last year. And, you know, so it's not like they're a pushover. But still, yeah, 2-2 is better than the other alternatives.
Yeah, and you never know what's going to happen when you have to throw in a doubleheader into a series. I always feel like a doubleheader is a good equalizer in that.
It's good for the weaker team, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Or just, you know, chaos is going to ensue one way or the other, and it broke the Marlins' way. Although, I'm sure in game two, there had to be a point not too early in the game where the win probability was heavily in the Marlins' favor. So, it was good to see the, you know, the rally at still on that late into a game of doubleheader baseball.
Yeah, and I think they did have a really good chance of winning game one as well. It's just some things didn't work. You guys were okay with the bunt, right? Like, the bunt wasn't the problem. The problem was Canario swinging out of his shoes when all he needed was contact of any sort.
I gotta say, like, just the one at bat has made me extremely negative at seeing Canario in the lineup for the rest of the weekend.
He hit a home run. It like almost went on Waveland the second game, so that was nice. Like, we know that he's talented. I think these are the things that they will figure out with experience, and it's really good that Craig Counsell, well, pretty much by necessity, because Seiya Suzuki's out, and so is Hap. Like, he doesn't have a choice. He has to play Canario. So this isn't a bald and dumb thing. This is like, I don't have a choice. This is the guy. So I got to put him out there. And, you know, for a few shining moments, he did his thing, just not in that one that would have made me very, very happy. But, you know, what you going to do? Blown saves happen, and the Cubs are still 13-9, miraculously.
Yeah. I think probably the most frustrating thing is when didn't Madrigal get a hit during that whole sequence?
Like, I think he had like a ground out RBI.
Oh, man, because I was thinking he actually had a line drive, you know, his version of a line drive single in a situation where it was like, okay, obviously he's going to hit a double play here, but you got to do what you got to do. And then to have Canario up in the scenario, I can't get the Wu-Tang playing scenario song out of my head when we talk about Canario, but to have him up when second and third, one out, that is the Madrigal play. Like, that's the time you want Madrigal up there to hit the standard ground ball to drive.
I think Madrigal was actually on base though.
Yeah,
when that happened, he was on second base because he hit the single. That's when Amaya bunted. It was beautiful bunt. It made sense. They needed those guys in scoring position. There's guys about to strike out. Nico was after Canario. I totally get that. Like, that was a bunt I did not object to. I just wanted to make that clear. I was not expecting it. And, you know, because Craig Counsell just doesn't bunt, but it made sense in that. At that time. But yeah, the thing is, and I think we're all in agreement, he didn't go up there looking to just make contact no matter what. He went up there to launch it into like a building across the street.
Yeah, and the fact is, like, this is one holdover from Joe Maddon era that I just can't shake from, you know, my personal arsenal of things I wish the Cubs would do, is when you have that runner on third and you absolutely need him to score with less than two outs, the sacrifice or, you know, the safety or suicide squeeze, depending on
how you play it. No one loves the squeeze more than Joe Madden.
Oh, I loved it so much. You know, it was like, yeah, we're getting that run, you know, forget it. So I would have loved, and, you know, if Canario had bunted, that run scores and everyone would have been shocked out of their gourd. So yeah, that's where my 2015 heart comes beating through my chest saying, just bunt him in, bring in John Lester. Let's do this.
Yeah. Unfortunately with a short bench and, even shorter now that you can't actually use Ian Happ, there was very little opportunity for them to like mix and match and get the right matchup in.
Does Nate the video guy still work for the team?
Oh, does he bet?
You don't remember the bunt tournament where he was a semifinalist?
Yeah, that's right. They'd have to sign him to a one day deal and put him on the roster. Who's getting DFA'd to do that though?
Canario in the coal mine.
Yep, we're basically 13% of the way through the schedule. Next up after this off day, which I hope we're going to be able to get this in time, is the Astros, and then they're off to Boston and New York to face the Red Sox and the Mets before actually playing an NL Central team in the Milwaukee Brewers. So that should be interesting. Oh, and they got a rematch with the Padres. That's fun. It's got to be a rough stretch. I think like Houston is scuffling a little bit. Maybe the Cubs will get lucky. It's only three games, and then they don't have to deal with Houston until the World Series, so whatever. But you hope that they will be able to take advantage. People are seeing a lot of positives. I think the guys are generally feeling good about themselves, even though the record could be better, but it is what it is. And what it is right now is a second place Cubs team that's within spitting distance first still, because it's early in the year and they have opportunities to make up the ground. So I'm feeling pretty good. And I think most Cubs fans with a soul should feel good about it too.
Discriminating against all those soulless Cubs fans.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we're still in the portion of the season where, at least for me, I don't know who the mediocre to bad teams are. I think we know that the Rockies and the White Sox are terrible. But outside of that, I mean, Houston's in last place. Minnesota is in fourth place. The Rays are in last place. Granted, still above 500, but still. The Giants and Diamondbacks are both under 500, but who knows if that's going to stay that way. The Dodgers only being two games above 500 is kind of nuts. The Marlins, I do think they are probably a terrible team, but you know, maybe not as bad. Maybe not a 261 winning percentage team. So no one, aside from, you know, the obvious, to me, the Rockies and the White Sox are obviously bad, and maybe the Marlins are, but
the A's are bad.
They are bad, but they're
not Astros bad.
Yeah, it's just weird. Like, yeah, I think they're probably even worse than their record shows. That's probably fair. It's just that guaranteed, like, oh, these guys are coming into town and you can take a deep breath and relax. There aren't a whole lot of them. I mean, hopefully the Cardinals are that team in the NL Central, but, you know, it's never going to work that way when they play the Cubs anyway. It's it's shaping up to be an interesting year, because I mean, it was a stunner to hear you say we're 13% of the way through the season, but yeah, I mean, it's pretty much everybody is at 20 games played or more. That's crazy. It seems like the
season feels like it just started.
Yeah. Yeah. But It is like I don't even know how to feel about the White Sox. Like
they're getting Cleveland Spiders comparisons now.
Yeah, they have had some of their best players go down, which is sad. But God, what a disaster!
You guys remember when the Pirates were in first place?
Yeah,
that was so long ago.
Yeah, it's gonna be their annual thing: hot start and then cool off.
That's why they play 162. The Cleveland team is actually the best team in the majors right now. I don't think that's going to sustain, but, you know, the Yankees are doing pretty well. That's kind of fun. Although, you know, their big bopper and Aaron Judge is slumping. But we don't have to worry about the Yankees for a little bit longer. So that's nice. Yeah, I think if you can split and or win most of your series, the Cubs are right now on a 95 win pace. They used to be on a 100 plus win pace, but then they decided not to sweep the Marlins, which I guess they didn't decide to do it because the Babbitt gods were just completely against the Cubs in Sunday's game. But that's kind of a fun perspective to think about. Like 13-9 is a 95 win pace, and that's cool. I think they'll do better than that, but we will see.
Oh, you think they'll be better than 95 wins?
Yeah, I'm going with 96. I think like early in the year we were saying, you know, like 87, 88, give or take. And now that I'm looking at this, like this isn't the final form. Like, yeah, I guess that's like Vegeta or some Dragon Ball Z thing, but this is not the final form of this Chicago Cubs team for multiple reasons. And once they get their big boys back, you really restore a lot of the depth that you can call upon, because right now that depth is at the major league level and they're being put to the fire. This is the baptism of fire, and they are doing pretty well, all things considered. Like, people are stepping up. Like, they're not going to be superstars. They're not brand names yet, but they're doing the job. And that's what I'm really kind of impressed with. Would I love for them to be like 17-5 or whatever? Sure. Like, they could have been if Adbert hadn't blown those saves, but it did happen. Now we move on and we say, okay, instead of being like a record setting 120 win pace, now we're at 95. That's okay. That'll probably get you in the playoffs. And right now they're in a fairly good position. If they weather the storm, if they use this off day wisely, if, you know, Justin Steele actually comes back and is able to give them 5 or 6 the first start back, and Taillon continues to be awesome and all the other things. And I think it's going to be a pretty exciting year still. And it already is.
I agree. That's what I'm expecting. That's how I'm vibing, that if they can weather this little injury storm and still come out the other side above 500 and ascending. Michael Busch, shoot, he's been a lot of fun to watch, not just the homer streak, but just good, solid at bats, aggressive on balls in his wheelhouse. The defense seems to be developing. And yeah, it just really seems like he knows how to hit. It's been fun to watch him. And yeah, overall, the bright spots in this lineup have been pretty bright.
I feel okay about this team, so that's how I feel. Okay. There are things that could be improved. There are some games I wish they won. There are some games they probably shouldn't have won. So, you know, it probably balances out karmically. So. Tyone's back. He looked good in his one start. Steele's throwing bullpens. You know, soon we'll have a problem with too many pitchers, which is a good problem to have.
Even Wisniewski looked good when they called him up to do that relief spot. That was really nice.
Yeah. I mean, I'm guessing Assad becomes the long reliever, which is fine. I mean, that dude, you know, I say it like every time he shows up on the screen, he's been like the secret weapon for the Cubs this season. He's just so... You know, anytime you call him up, he answers the bell. You know, he's not blowing you away with 98 mile an hour heat, but he just always seems to get the job done.
Yeah, I think they should just all adopt Jameson Taillon's philosophy. It's like, my stuff is good. I'm just going to throw strikes and dare you to hit it. And then my defense is going to take care of everything I don't whiff by you, you know? So I like that mentality. I wish they'd do that more. But there's been a lot of three ball counts that have just really irked me. And, you know, I feel like if they just got some more quick outs because they're throwing strikes and guys have no choice but to just be ready for that, it never really works out quite that way because baseball is stupid like that. But I think that'll do them a lot of favors, especially a guy like Jordan Wicks. His stuff is really good. Just stop nibbling. Throw a strike. Do it, sir. It'll be fine.
It reminds me of the, what was it, the fourth inning where Hendricks gave up 3 or 4 runs and faced 7 batters, but he threw like 9 or 10 pitches or something ridiculous
that. Yeah, that was today, yes. Sometimes it doesn't work, but for the most part, like, just if you do the math, if BABIP is around like 330 or so, 67% of the time they're going to hit it to a defender and it's going to get converted into the out. That gives you a major advantage. Just pretend that's going to happen. And most of the time you'll be fine. I really feel that is the case. Now, that doesn't mean you should throw batting practice, obviously, but their stuff is so good across the board in that pitching rotation. The only issue is command, and it's like super hard to throw a baseball accurately, so I totally get it. But at this level, there's an expectation that you can do it, and I really just wish they would do it. That's all.
Fair enough.
The love affair with us is quite a romance, but until now the story stayed the same. But you changed the script so
we... Yeah, so I think that's it for now. I have a work trip coming up. If something weird happens by next Sunday, we can try to get another one in before I have to disappear for a little bit. But otherwise, we'll come back probably after they've played Milwaukee and a bunch of other purportedly really good teams again. So, yeah, this is probably one that I'm just going to leave as is for the edit. Honestly, like when I look at other podcasts, even podcasts that are really mainstream and good, they leave in a lot of like weird noises. Like, you know, you hear I am noises or dogs barking or a jackhammer in the distance or sirens. So I feel like we're doing okay. But I do like to make sure that the three people who are listening to this have a good experience. So I do what I do.
Do it for the love of the three.
Yep. Yep. I care about you all. And it's actually kind of fun, so we'll see what I can do with this guy. But thank you, gentlemen, for hanging out with me again. You can find us at obstructiveview.net. We are on the various socials that haven't burnt, you know, completely descended into chaos yet. You can thank Rich Deanna for our theme song and Randall Sanders for pulling the final out call of the 2016 World Series, which the Cubs did win. Any last words, gents?
Go Cubs. Take out the trash next week.
Yeah. And enjoy this last off day until my birthday.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday if I don't see you.
Preemptive happy birthday. Yeah. I didn't get to anything. Sorry.
It's all right. the Cubs didn't either. It's just a blank day on the schedule.
Wow, that's like... Oh, okay. I see it. Just a couple of weeks, so it's not the entire month like I thought it was. Red room. But yeah, everybody enjoy the off day, and thanks for listening. Go Cubs.
Go Cubs.
It was more than just a game.